Welcome to Thinking Ahead. I'm your host, Carter Phipps, and we're exploring the movements, trends, people, and ideas that are shaping our evolving world. Make sure you subscribe today on your favorite podcast platform, and most of all, I hope you enjoy today's episode. Jeff Salzman, creator of the podcast The Daily Evolver, has a message for his listeners. Despite what the headlines may seem to tell us, culture is evolving all around the world in all kinds of ways. It's wonderful, it's beautiful, it's worth celebrating, and it's very, very messy. For well over a decade now, Salzman has been bringing the insights of integral theory and integral philosophy right down to the ground, so to speak, doing deep dives into the news of the moment, whatever it may be, and looking at it all through an integral or developmental lens. For a philosophy that we often think of as being rooted in big picture insights about history and worldviews and consciousness, Salzman's determination to make it all accessible and grounded is very refreshing and always welcome. Jeff has an eclectic background. He's an entrepreneur, founder of Career Track, co-founder of Boulder Integral. He worked for several years at the Integral Institute. And in his latest position, he's actually on the board of the Institute for Cultural Evolution, where he has helped my co-founder, Steve McIntosh, and I build the institution. I hope he will become eventually a regular guest on this podcast. But for now, let's welcome Jeff Salzman to Thinking Ahead. All right, Jeff Salzman, welcome to the podcast. Great to have you on.
Yeah, good to be here, Carter. Thanks for inviting me on.
Yeah, it's great. So we've been, you know, we've known each other for a while, and we've been partners in crime in the Institute for Cultural Evolution, where you're a board member and a contributor to all kinds of elements of it. And in some ways, Jeff, I think of you as having created maybe the most one of the most important sort of artifacts and content artifacts of the world that we sort of share, which is the general world of integral theory and integral philosophy and such things, how they're applied to the world. And you've created the Daily Evolver podcast and variations on it, and that's been very influential over the last decade. So tell us how that came to be and how that's evolved and where you've come to with it.
Yeah, well, the express purpose of the Daily Evolver is to use current events to, first of all, use current events to understand integral theory, but also use integral theory, the more importantly, to understand current events. And so to bring this developmental feel to the arena of what's happening, you know, the evolution's happening. It's beautiful. It's not pretty, but it is what's powering, you know, the cosmos since the Big Bang.
Amen.
And, right. You know, so this, it has, and I want it to have that spiritual feeling to it, you know, that this is an enchanted world, that we are all here for a reason, you know, some meaning. I don't, you know, integral theory helps us here because we see that at an earlier traditional level, like we'd want it really important to attach a myth to that, you know, of what, who it is and how and why. But at an integral stage, we just, you know, feel it. That's the integration of that sort of traditional spirituality, shorn of all ideology, you know,
right.
As a felt sense, as a dimension of reality, we can, you know, experience. And so, you know, whether it's the gender roles or race or politics or Russia, Ukraine, the developmental perspective really has a lot of explanatory power, as we say. You know, it helps us to understand things. So that's what I'm doing. And you know, as I'm coming back from a hiatus where I've sort of been rethinking things, I'm coming back with probably a weekly Daily Evolver, where it would just be more newsy and sort of reference my Twitter feed, which is also something that I've been, you know, excited about.
That's cool. That's great. Yeah. Well, one thing I always feel from you, Jeff, and I always kind of get this, you know, here's what I love about how you kind of relate to current events, because you're not afraid to go into the weeds on current events. You know, sometimes integralists and people in the worlds we know, they can be very high level. You know, we can talk about evolution at a high level, and that's fantastic. But you get into the weeds. You talk about current events and all kinds of details, and you talk about developmental. You talk about these worldviews, how they're interacting. You get on the ground. And you talk about, but you also do it with this kind of like big picture sort of like, look at the love for it all, you know, the love for this process we're in, and it's messy and it's difficult and some, who knows, and it could go wrong in 100 ways, and yet it's all happening, and it's culture and it's messy and but it's evolving, and you can see it evolving in real time, and you kind of capture that, the spirit of it, and the way you approach it. I appreciate that.
Well, I appreciate you saying that. And I think it's a piece that we can add to the piece that we all know deep down inside. And that is that this life is fucked up. You know, it's hard to be a human being. You know, this is the first noble truth. It's actually true. Life is suffering.
Yeah, there's a profound, the Buddha was right.
Fallen world. Religions have always tried to explain this fundamental fact. And integral, you know, despite that there's a story that we can tell of growth and beauty, goodness, and truth, you know, as a values gravity pulling us forward in a very real way, that there's still a, you know, it's difficult. And goodness is sometimes put forward by badness. You know, wars are actually fruitful. They're horrible in the short term, but if you look at history, they move consciousness forward. And I'm talking not just about, you know, big, horrible wars like in Ukraine, but even the wars we have with each other and the culture wars and the wars we have within us, you know, all these various subpersonalities. Evolution apparently likes that. You know, evolution doesn't like things to be all peaceful and calm.
So
that piece has to be online too, both of those pieces. And that's good, because people instinctively don't want to hear an optimistic, optimist. I've never liked optimistic, actually, you know, or hope. I've never liked hope, you know, it's like growth, you know, how about comparing a 10-year-old to a 13-year-old? Is that progress?
Yeah, right. You
know, bright-eyed 8-year-old to a surly, you know, 13-year-old behind their bedroom door. Not that doesn't look that way.
Yeah, you don't. It doesn't immediately present that way. But we know in some larger picture it is.
Nor does the culture. You know, it's like, you call this progress?
Yeah.
But anyway.
Well, I always think of evolution. I mean, cultural evolution is. It's like it's the reason why people, there's a million diatribes against the sort of cultural evolution often is, because it's sometimes hard to see in the short term or the midterm, or, you know, it's sometimes, unless you just take a really big picture, you say, oh yeah, okay, I see that. You're right. It's like, you know, Robert Wright, you know, the author wrote Non-Zero. He has this great line about biological evolution, the history of humanity. He goes, you know, if you look over a billion years, and you just check in every 50 million years or 100 million years, you could see that the highest form of life was more intelligent, more complex. Things are moving forward, you know. But, you know, every 100 million years, you know, and he goes, and then, you know, even for 100 million years, it might not be that. There might be a cataclysm. Everything might go back in some ways. But if you check in every 100 million years over 2 billion years, you could ascertain a trajectory. And thank God cultural evolution didn't take that long. But there is a truth to that, even with cultural evolution. You know, it's messy. It's hard to see sometimes. But there's still this drift toward, things we want. And God, I feel like, you know, the opportunity that we partake in, I hope, is to start to get our hands around some possibility of forward evolution and forward movement and culture without quite the nastiness without quite the downsides. It made me start to mitigate. And I don't pretend that's easy or going to happen like that, but that's, it seems that's the opportunity. If that, yeah. That's, well, that's in front of us for the next century, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think if you look at history, it's happening because the state of history for 99.9% of it is just basically constant warfare. It was.
Right.
It just was. You know, I mean, there were times when, you know, new people would get into new territory and they'd live peacefully. And there'd be times when they'd have sort of armistices and stuff, but it, it would click back. And that's still true. You know, it's as brutal now in parts of the world that as ever was. But what's remarkable is that, you know, what, 80, 90% of people live peaceful lives in terms of physical violence. You know, there's also subcultures and pockets of real warlike violence in the U.S., you know? So these are still there. I mean, they're trailing. But the war doesn't stop. It just moves from the physical to what we, using Ken Wilber's aqua model, would say the subtle. So the world of ideas and the world of ideologies and the world of Twitter, the world of social media. So that's right, where we get up and go to war now. And it's, again, it's the progress is that it's less bloody and it's, you know, merely character assassination instead of actual assassination.
Yes. Right.
And whatever, you know, it's still not pretty. And it's still, you know, I sometimes leave Twitter feeling like I've been to a war zone. It's just, I've been to this entity.
There's this, someone had this great meme, this great Twitter meme where someone shared it. It was like, there's this line from Lord of the Rings where King Theoden has this line where he says, what he's looking at the, some war, I think in the last war on Lord of the Rings, he says, what can men do against all this, against such hate? And the guy had shared, he said, this is how I feel every time I get on Twitter. It's
like, what? That's always been true. You know, I'm always reading, listening to histories and so forth. I'm listening to one about the first of the witch trials in Salem, or actually in Springfield, Massachusetts, 1640 something. And it's called The Ruin of All Witches is the name of the book.
Wow.
But it's just the way that, first of all, people were drenched in spirit. Everything had a spiritual, they were swimming in it. So everything mattered. You know, if they had crop failure, it was because of them. It's like a two-year-old when mommy and daddy are fighting. You know, it's like, what have I done? How is this my fault? And so there's, you know, there's always just, and so how they were suspicious of their neighbors. And this is just the state of things, Carter.
Yeah.
I mean, and this is, I mean, of course, this turned into an ugly thing with the witch trial and so forth, but this was just the state of life.
Yeah, right.
You know,
right.
For people. So anyway, the trajectory that I want to point out, because I think it's really important, is moving from physical warfare to intellectual, ideological warfare. Maybe spiritual warfare is next. I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, this universe is, you know, the physics of this universe is that the way I see it is, you know, using polarities, we fight and we friend our way forward. And we just can't stop doing both as human beings. The other part, the good part is we love each other. We want to fuck. We want a friend. We want to, you know, get in each other's hair. You know, we want to, you know, both those forces are online and they're powering this universe, hoping that, you know, other universes have nicer physics and we can just, you know, sit on the riverbank and somebody feed us grapes.
Well, my favorite example. So, I mean, it's fascinating because people say, well, is this going to be a civil war? I even wrote an article, Who Wants to Skip the Civil War? And people talk about, is it going to descend in civil war?
Great
but
article.
In a way, I like, oh, thank you. I think that it's almost truer and more like, I don't even know what's a civil war look like in this day and age. We're not in the North and South, you know, it's like, you know, it's almost better to say, well, we are in a civil war. It's just not a civil war of arms. And every once in a while, violent elements break out, but it's a civil war. It's almost more, we're in it really. And what it's going to look like over time. Yeah. There'll be some violent things and I'm sure that will continue. But we're in it, and how it's going to resolve itself, we're still waiting. Yeah.
We've been at it for millennia, and yeah, we're in it now. And this is, you know, this is what I want to normalize, so that people can move from this, what I consider to be first tier for people who know this word lingo, idea yeah of everything. It's sort of an orientation of life where you look at something, you say, this shouldn't be happening. It's awful that it is. I can't stand it. And somebody needs to be blamed and condemned. And that's just the way, you know, I've moved through most of my life with that. I mean, that's just what we do, so that we can realize that actually we're supposed to be in the arena with each other. You know, this should be happening. Unfortunately, I mean, it's horrible, but mm-hmm it maybe should's not the right word. It is happening. This right is happening. And I can stand it. And I can actually be a force for goodness, truth, and beauty in this situation. And not spend all my time thinking it shouldn't be happening. You know, so evolution, you know,
that
updraft of evolution, once we begin, this is where I replace optimism with faith.
Yeah.
I just have faith, you know, because I can see that this is the way of, you know, since the Big Bang, particles have been conscious, particles with consciousness, this is an important piece, have been complexifying and having these big stage phase changes into, you know, form and liveness and cells and beings and then self-conscious humans. And then if you think of the world, and all of it's accelerating, you know, so that if you think of the world of your grandparents, our grandchildren are going to be as different from us as we are from our grandparents. Technology, the way we see and work with, deal with each other, the second person, and also the first person, how we see ourselves, what we see, what we're actually able to be conscious of. My grandparents, you know, God bless them. They were wonderful people, but they are provincial. And, you know, think of that. So, and think of how I relate to, you know, I mean, if they could see my life, I'm, you know, gay. You know, I've never been married. I don't have kids. You know, I'm with a guy. They would not think that was progress. You know, all of that. You know, I you know, so we think, so what are our grandchildren going to be like, or our great grandchildren? I mean, really, I don't know. And that's the beauty of evolution. It's always full of surprises.
Yeah.
But right. I will say that there is, you know, if we look at, you know, evolutionary theory, as we move through, you know, from pre-traditional, traditional, modern, postmodern, there's an integral to the next stage of development. That's what we're all about here, is, you know, sort of positing this idea. Right. That there's the move in integral is an integration of all of the previous stages.
Right.
You know.
Right.
So there's
an inclusion. Move up, it's a move out, and it's an inclusive move. It wraps its, it tries to wrap its arms around the whole thing, not just get away from it.
Exactly. So that can become a conscious practice. So we can see that, you know, I was kind of born in a little, you know, when I was 6 years old, I knew I was going to be leaving Western Pennsylvania. You know, I knew maybe there was a modern consciousness, you know, whatever karma, you know, we have 10,000 lifetimes, who knows, whatever happens. Yeah. But I knew that. And so we all have our home base. And at some point we get bored with it. And, you know, we move into postmodern or whatever. And then it just becomes interesting and a practice to say that this integrated Jeff wants to come online, where he has the sensitivity of postmodernity, the rationality of modernity, the faithfulness of traditionalism, the passion of the warrior stage, the enchantment of the tribal stage, and the intuition, you know, of the archaic stage, where you're just sort of waking up, as we all did when we were, you know, 1 year old, that all wants to be online. It's all there. It was never really gone. All these stages, the egg's still there. But we've repressed it. We've cast it out. We don't understand it. So we end up in this sort of anxious modern stage where we can't feel our guts, you know, and which our guts are religious. They just want to be religious, you know. And so there's a way that we have to find religion again. So I don't know. This is all, I'm working it out. You know, we all are. But that's the project.
I love that. There's a number of pieces there. First of all, I love the idea that, you know, this is messy. Even like I often think that even the idea that, like you said earlier, shouldn't be like this, right? We shouldn't be. In a way, that's a beautiful thing. Like how many points in history could people have even thought it shouldn't be like this? A lot of history, people thought it just, this is the way it's always been, baby. You know, even the fact that we've lived in an era where people think maybe it shouldn't be like this is an incredible move forward. And I think if you start to look at it like that, then you can appreciate A, that's probably not going to be totally like this, but, and B, that's a beautiful thing itself, and appreciating context instead of just kind of pine for some imagined, peace and quiet, cultural peace and quiet.
Yeah. I mean, finally, and that's the, of course, the battle cry of every meme prior to every stage of development or worldview prior to Integral, is that once everybody becomes fill in the blank, faithful to my God, rational, once everybody becomes
rational, secular, right,
then we're going to be fine. And so my job is to make sure that everybody becomes the worldview that I have. And then so that we can finally fucking relax.
Exactly. Right.
You know, people get with it.
It's funny how that just never happens.
It never happens.
Yeah.
Doesn't happen.
Yeah.
So what happens that at some point you get hip to that and you realize maybe the game is, I want it all. I want all of those to be online. Even, you know, they hate each other. They don't want to befriend me, but I'll befriend them. They don't have to know I'm befriending them, you know.
Yeah.
And, you know, just let that be my practice.
Yeah. Yeah. Amen. I remember at one point, you know, there's always a point in your life when you start to sort of wake up to history, not as you sort of learned it in grade school and high school and college, maybe. But really, you, as an adult, you start to grapple with actual history a little more. At least that's how it was for me, you know. And you start to really like, oh, what was life like? What, how? And I remember, you know, starting to read back in, you know, and I didn't have a classical education. I was like generations past. You know, my parents had a classical education. I wish I would have. I wish someone would force me to learn Latin when I was young. You know, that would have been great. but I didn't have that. But you know, when you first start reading in like, you know, Roman era and Greek era and the classical era, and you start, and I remember just reading, going back even before that and reading about the, and you're saying, wait a minute. It's like, all I'm reading about is this warlord or this group, you know, enslave that group and then that group. It's just, and you start to like put the pieces together and you're like, oh my God, you know, this is a crazy, and this is even just the areas we know about in the world. Mm-hmm. No one even paid attention to the other areas over here, you know, these are the area we have a real history on, people are writing about. And it's just like, it's just one conquest after the other. And it's just like that rape and pillage world, you know, and then you have these brief moments. Of course, Rome was incredible because you have this kind of, you briefly carve out this, you know, temporary break from that kind of world, but even that couldn't stand against what was happening. It just it gets overwhelmed eventually by what's happening, and you see, oh, who could have predicted that this traditional culture coming online and starting to take over, at least in Europe, so strongly, you know, this Christian, but even across the globe, and starting to, like, you know, to put it bluntly, you know, put a kibosh on the rape and pillage world, you know, and kind of say, no, we're going to do something else here, this transcendence. And of course, it doesn't change it completely, doesn't end violence or anything like that. But it fundamentally, you go from 500 AD to 1600, 1700 AD, the world is ready for something else. It's ready for this explosion of modernity in a way it just wasn't 1,000 years ago, even though you saw some elements of it, it couldn't emerge.
It's interesting, and it illustrates the sort of nature of evolution. It's not lockstep. Mm. We're not moving up a ladder here. we're in this kaleidoscopic probability cloud so that you could have modernity arise in Greece among a certain set of intellectuals who thought modern thoughts, you know, basically did mathematics. That happened at other places where there was a stable and complex enough society that there could be a scholar class. They went right up. That's the updraft of evolution. But amazing. Of course, it can't last because there's, you know, there's no scaffolding. The rest of the society's red or, you know, warrior, enslaving, you know, spitting on the sidewalk. They're uncouth, these people, I'm telling you. But then we grind our way forward, and then there, you know, the baseline moves from red to traditional, from warrior to traditional, and we, you know, get agriculture and bad teeth, and we live long enough to, you know, is agriculture progress? You know, I had an argument with Charles Eisenstein. One time he said, no, it was a big wrong turn for humanity. It's like,
if that's a wrong turn for humanity, what's the right turn? I mean,
it's like, is adolescence the wrong turn for humanity? Yes. You know, I mean, do we really have to go through the early teen years? Is that really necessary? Apparently it is, you know, so, so again, to think that, you know, God bless everybody, and Eisenstein's a great guy, but to think that we made a wrong turn at agriculture.
That's way back there.
A whole balloon to me. I don't know. It's like, oh, well, then how are we going to recover from that? You know?
Exactly. Like, how's that even help? <It's> like...
and, you know, it's just the nature of growth is that it doesn't always look good. And there's, you know, of course, new problems that arise. But, you know, all of those are still alive. That hunter-gatherer is still in us.
Yeah. Yeah.
The wanting to be part of the community and conform and, you know, I can feel the relaxation of that traditional stage where you know who you are and you're God's child and here, you know, on a sacred mission, you know, you're a creation of God.
Yeah. You know? And when that took over, when that became super strong and that power, you know, it had a certain, that was an unusual moment probably in history when everyone believes to some degree, when everyone is focused on this transcendence, when everyone is in this common myth, you know, common religious context. I mean, that's a very unusual thing to get.
Yeah,
it was. And it probably allowed something to, and of course, it had a million problems, but it probably allowed something to be, you know, allowed modernity, you know, and in some ways it made me set the stage for modernity in a way that was nothing else could quite, you know, that you just kept collapsing back into that classical rape and pillage warrior world, you know, which had its own beauty, but you needed something else. And so now I often, we're in this kind of unique moment where we had this, you know, we've had 250 years of modernism, which has all its dignities and disasters, all its beauty and its problems and its mess. And we're so in it, you know, we live in it now, like that world lived in. Yeah, I mean, we're so in it, you know, like that world lived in transcendence, you know, lived in that religious myth, you know, lived in that world. And yet now so many of us live in this world. I mean, not everyone, obviously, there's a lot of different things happening, but we swim in it. And yet now we have this new, now postmodernism's come in and it's changed it, you know, and it's changing it. And, you know, in the last 50 years, we've upset the apple cart, you know, we finally, you know, and evolution is, so what's it? And so talk to me about how you see this. Cause you know, we talk about, okay, last 50 years, the 60s, the explosion, postmodernism, you know, the movements toward equality in all kinds of areas, this recognition of ecology and a whole new dimensions of that and understanding that. And and then this, you know, it's like you say, sensitivity and consciousness and inner development and back to re-enchantment of the world and moving back toward that and moving against the secularization and so where are we in that process? Are we coming to the end of that or are we just beginning? What do you say,
Jeff? Always an end and always a beginning in evolution. That's the cool things, but. Yeah, I mean, if you just a quick sketch from you, I talked about, you know, this obscene idea that war is fruitful. Well,
yes.
World War II, hard to overestimate the destruction of World War II. It gave birth to the postmodern world,
yeah,
where the world where all triumphalist narratives are blown up. Right. No more nationalism, fundamentalism, a deconstruction of all truth. And you can see why that had to happen, you know. And it happens, of course, at first in the intelligentsia, the cutting edge, and then finally, you know, as these things mature, we have moved into a postmodern deconstructive, particularly in the West. You know, gender roles, religion's gone. Of course, modernity kills God, but, you know, yeah, Postmodernity is glad of it. Although the postmodernity wants to feel their way back into indigenous, you know, there's a wonderful impulse in postmodernity to rehabilitate, yeah, bring back online the, yeah, very early stages. And that's great. You know, a lot of meditation, a lot of, you know, shamanic kind of practices, sort, yeah, of a interest in magic in a, you know, the real sense. So that that's the, you know, beginning of an integration that comes with postmodernity. But the downside is, you know, you're unmoored. So, you know, yeah, I always think of modernity as being sort of the shadow emotion is anxiety. It's like, who am I? I mean, I've tripled my lifespans. I have the indoors. I have skyscrapers. I have all of this stuff. But I'm still going to die, you know. What does that mean? And you know, nothing. It doesn't mean anything. We're, you know, protoplasm on a rock hurtling through space.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, you know, and then by the time you get to postmodernity, the shadow emotion is depression.
Mm.
You know, it's like nothing worked. You know, none of these, everything they told us is a lie. There's no such thing as truth. You know, and not only that, but if you look closely and you wake up to the reality, you see that it's all just power. It's all just
power games, right? Yeah.
You know, who can oppress who? There's truth to that. You know, in some ways, that's progress over some triumphalist narrative of, yeah, you know, traditionalism. Traditionalism, that's their whole thing, is triumphalist narrative. It's like, you know,
yeah,
we're going to transcend. We're going to, you know, create heaven on earth.
Yes.
So anyway. So here we are in postmodernity, and I think people are getting tired of being sick and tired. You know, I think, mm-hmm, people are, I see it on Twitter. I see it in some of the places that I, you know, people I talk to, that there is at least an identifiable emergence of, mm-hmm, people in consciousness that is bored with their own ideology.
Mm-hmm.
And they're just, what do my opponents really think? I mean, I'm tired of, you know, even the idea of steel manning, you know, putting your opponents in the best possible light as a practice. That's evidence of it. That's
the,
one of the
fact that that's come online. I
heard that word 5 years ago, I don't think.
Yeah.
And you know, so that sort of thing is happening. And I think that's an emergence out of postmodernity, yeah, into integral. You know, again, as a center of gravity, we all have different aspects of ourselves at different stages, but the,
yeah,
this movement forward into integral.
It's true. There's like a new set of sort of values that have sort of bubbled up to almost respond to the cacophony and intensity of this world of social media, yes, almost. You know, it's like, I know one of the things Ted Nordhaus at the Breakthrough Institute talks about, achieving disagreement, you know, which is also like it's kind of, in that great, I love that. You know, same guy. Yeah, like things like that, you know, just steel manning, all these kind of like, okay, how do we really engage here? We know we all just throw ourselves into this social public sphere, and we see what happens. We're 5-10 years in, you know, it's this kind of radical experiment. Now, how do we kind of rein this? And we know that we can be manipulated. That's the other thing, right? We know the but again, it's like, you know, the beautiful thing about humans is they quit, you know, the speed at which we can collectively or individually also respond to what happened in 2016, what happens in 20, what happened before, what happened, you know, it's like, we see, okay, this, we could, everyone can be manipulated from both sides, you know, and how do we respond to that? How do we keep how, and you people are, you can see the antibodies respond, the antibodies develop, you know?
Yeah. No, you're so right, Carter. And that it's well said. I've been pondering lately this idea that I both believe everybody and believe nobody. And because I'm trying to sort out what is the, again, this felt sense of this new noosphere, this new body of thought and that social media is supporting as a third person technology. You know, we move into second person, how we think, first person. And it's like that. It's like achieving disagreement, I think. I love that idea. The idea that I actually can coexist with you. Mm-hmm. And even in my heart, I let you in, even though you are fucked up beyond all recognition. No, you are. You see the world radically differently than I do. But somehow that's okay. And you can call me names and I can... I, you know, see that I want to call you names. Maybe I'm, you know, working on that. But it doesn't, it's not dispositive in the way that it used to be.
Yeah.
You know, and this is maybe the truth of postmodernity, Carter, is that there really isn't a truth in the way that we thought there was.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's a way in which including it achieves a certain wisdom that is, includes truth. I mean, we're still trying to be accurate and get facts.
Yeah, data. Right.
But it transcends that in that there's, you know, I don't know. Again, this is the sort of the, where the territory I'm working on.
Yeah. It's almost like there's a, we're still trying to, you know, we're fighting to our, we're in our worldviews and our camps. And then at some point there's a reckoning, there's like almost like two truths emerge. One is we're still trying to like convince each other and we're still trying to express and yet suddenly somewhere like another truth emerges that we have to like the reality that we have to live, that we can't quite do that either.
Yeah.
We have to try and we're, and yet underneath it, it's like the reality that we can't quite do it, that somehow we have to negotiate each other realizing that no one's going to win, you know? And it's like that it's a deep thing, realizing that no one's going to win quite, you know, it's like, cause we all want to win that war, that battle. That's a deep, it's a deep values battle. You know, we want to win and yet it's very hard to reckon. And so it's interesting. And there's something about the acceleration of social media, the acceleration is created. I think it's pushed that forward in some way.
Yeah, I do too. And it's like the first person of that is that, I don't even trust myself. I don't even trust. I hope I don't win. I don't really actually want to win because, you know, I don't. It's not big enough. It's not enough. Mm-hmm. So that there's you hold your own truths far more provisionally, and you see them instead of be them.
Yeah.
And, you know, and you. You know, maybe to just develop this a bigger witness consciousness allows it all in, you know, all perspective. And then there's an intelligence to the process so that the proper perspective arises as needed because you have access to multiple perspectives.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you're friendly to multiple perspectives.
Yeah.
You know, they're at war with each other. They don't even like you.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know, but it's exciting, isn't it?
It is exciting. It's a good way to look at it. And I personally, and then just to say, like, I love Twitter too. I'm a, of all the social media worlds, I've sort of gravitated to Twitter. And it's not because sometimes I, sometimes I'm on.
Plug our Twitter at Daily Evolver. Sign up for my feed. And Carter, what's yours?
It's Carter Phipps. You can, it's, I don't think there's any other Carter Phipps up there. So, yeah, so it's like, and sometimes I'm up there and I just feel like, okay, I got to get off this thing before my consciousness grinds down too much. You know, sometimes you have to like give yourself a break and like recognize, okay, this isn't, I'm not, whether spending more time here is not healthy. And but then other times it's like, oh, I get a quick pick. Like you said, like it, there's very few ways you can kind of tap into the noosphere and get a sense of what's going on and hear directly from a lot of people. And if you curate your feed well, you can hear directly directly from a lot of interesting people and hear what they're thinking, hear how they're responding to things in kind of real time that you can't almost in any other context. And that's very interesting. That's very unique kind of thing.
It's thrilling, you know.
Yeah.
In its way. So what do you think of Elon? I mean,
I think I change every day. I mean, you know, Elon, well, first of all, I just can't even imagine that why he wants to do this, but he's taking it on, you know, and, yeah. It feels like he's also, he's kind of, I feel like I think he's genuinely trying and I give him credit for that. You know, I don't think he's not an ideological person. He's trying to do this. And I'm kind of curious to see where he is in 6 months or a year, because I feel like he's kind of learning. Maybe he'll go down a groove and he'll just be that person, and you'll just be, he'll be predictable, you know, and you'll just say, okay, that's Elon, that's his thing, he does that, you know. Mm-hmm. But I don't feel he's settled like that in the world of politics and this. So, like, not everything he's done, sometimes I'm like, what are you doing? You know, it's like, why are you doing that? Or why are you giving a poll about whether this person, shouldn't we have some kind of standard? Shouldn't we have some kind of like clear way whether or not someone should be on Twitter or not? Not just a poll on Twitter. What, I don't know. But you know, I appreciate the transparency. Obviously, Twitter was trying to put their finger on the scales. You know, it's like of the left, and you know, and I appreciate him coming out and saying that this shouldn't be happening. And you know, so it's just like I feel like every day he does something where I think that's great, and then he does something else. I'm like, I don't know. Well, that's weird. Yeah. So I feel like I haven't come down.
Yeah,
is that what
I mean? There's, you know, so here's an integral practice. So The left doesn't like Elon. You know, they've moved. They used to like Elon when he made electric cars and kept his mouth shut.
Exactly.
Which he actually never did, but he. But at any rate, but I get that I think in the sacred world to come, we won't have individual people with this kind of power. You know, the multi-hundred billionaires is a failure of policy in a way that we will figure out. So I get that, and I have antibodies to that and appreciate there are antibodies in the field for that.
Yeah.
You know, from a modern point of view, from just an achievement point of view, Elon Musk redefines what a human being is capable of.
Yeah.
By a magnitude, order of magnitude.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, period. So if you think of all of his achievements in space and
it's extraordinary. You know, who knows where he'll be in 10 years, you know, what he'll be doing.
Yeah, and I'd be hard pressed to think of a person who has affected the world more for good than Elon Musk and as an individual. I mean, I'm open to argument, but I'd nominate him. Yeah. And then of course the right feels like, they've got somebody. They see him as their guy. I mean, they don't.
Yeah, they got a champion now. But I don't think he is their champion. I just think
he's willing to, punch postmodernity in the nose. You know, he's totally willing to go up against the intelligentsia, the elite, and he seems to have that quality that I don't want to say. There's probably a better word than psychopathy. But sort of on the empathy scale, where what people are saying about you just doesn't, you don't give a shit.
Yeah.
It doesn't hit you. It doesn't matter to you.
That's a very powerful thing. I don't have that.
A very powerful thing. Yeah. I mean, you see it in people and you realize that almost anybody in the public eye who's just in the arena, in the public arena, and that's in some ways, it's called for in all of us. It's a little bit like this agreeing to be disagreeable or whatever, you know, where, you know, I what you say doesn't have to, I don't have to lay awake and think about it all night. What you said.
I know. Right. Exactly.
You know,
he's got that.
So he's there already. He's fully formed to that. And that's his superpower. And then, you know, from any perspective, you have to say he's a systems of systems of systems thinker. You know, he's meta.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
So he's integral in many ways, and kind of an undisciplined one, which is, I think, in some ways, even more integral in the sense that he's willing and able and comfortable using red. He'll just come in and bust up the China shop.
Yeah.
You know, that's all true. Eyes on me. You know, I do things to outrage you. I do things to, entertain you. I try to move the ball forward for humanity, but all eyes on me.
Yeah.
And that's red.
Yeah.
And that's powerful too, but also scary and, you know, a bull in a china shop. It's like the joke about, you know, Trump being the horse. There's a horse loose in the hospital.
Yeah,
it's hysterical. You know, you've got to watch
that. For people not knowing, that's a comedy routine someone did about Trump. That's just really funny.
Yeah, John Mulaney. Yeah. So anyway, there's that.
And then also, all those things.
Messianic religious, you know, Dune kind of, you know, I'm going to save humanity and take us into the cosmos, which maybe that's what, I don't know.
Yeah. I'm with you. Like, I want to be at a point where either on the left or right in the middle, whatever, it's like one person, we don't need like one person to come in and say, you know, and, or be that powerful. We don't need that somehow, or we don't. Or that's not the defining factor, but you know, sometimes it is, and like you're saying, it's a bit scary, and it could go wrong. But he's not obvious, you know. I feel like he's trying to do it in ways that are positive. You know, we'll see.
It's like electric cars. I mean, he moved that field forward by a decade minimum.
Yeah, you know, and you got to have like, I mean, the entrepreneur. I mean, it's like, you know, one of the like probably sort of, you know, shadow elements of that warrior energy in modernism is this incredible entrepreneurial energy. You know, it's like, and he's got that. I mean, and of course, I think to be that person, you know, you see that in some visionaries, you know, you have to not give a fuck about what anyone says and just go balls to the wall, you know, in a certain direction and be able to do it and care. And of course it comes along with massive baggage. But that's an incredible, it's also a talent that moves things forward, and you know, and it can't, you could never move things forward without that massive baggage. So you just get, it's a whole package, you know?
I'm open to that. You know, the idea of sort of thinking our way and, you know, visioning our way and all the stuff that we thought our way forward was the only way, you know, there has to be that, you know, that adolescent, there's something, I don't know. But
I'm telling you, I feel at this point in my life. Yeah.
He puts fart sounds in the Tesla. You know, the Tesla, you can say it, set it so it will fart at an intersection. I mean, that's built into the, you can't get rid of that. So, you know, so that's what we're talking about.
Yeah, exactly. Right. It's like, and people love their Teslas. I don't know. Do you have a Tesla? You like it? Yeah. Anyway, it's,
it's an interesting, you have to sort of get into that little Tesla hive mind in the sense that they're always updating it. They're always on this. If you go in the morning and it's a new software thing. And so that's not for everybody. And then there's a lot of vaporware. You know, this idea that it's self-driving.
Oh my God. The line between vaporware and just outright lying is a thin line.
This is where I have my, you know, antibodies.
No, I agree. It's like there is a line where he just can't, you can't, you know, you have to be subject to certain authorities. And I get like the entrepreneurial ambition doesn't want to be subject to any kind of authorities, you know, and I get that sometimes you have to flout authorities and regulatory structures to do your thing. Otherwise, we'll just all live in the, you know, we won't have those moments, those, you know, moments of brilliance and important things. But nevertheless, we also have to assert that sometimes those things are important. They can't be flouted universally, you know, because then we're fucked, you know. So it's such an interesting dynamic.
Again, welcome to the mess of evolution. You know, the Europeans are gonna regulate him, and you know this one will regulate. But welcome to the mess of evolution, and this should be happening, Carter.
Should be happening. Amen. Yeah,
this is happening. You know,
tell me what's going on. Let's talk. Let's get on the ground with like Russia, Ukraine. What's happening? How do you see what's happening there? Because it's a weird time. It's an incredibly peaceful time we've been in, you know? And yet, you know, I don't know, are we in the fourth turning, whatever the particular, you know, how long can we go, you know, is like there's a lot of tension. There's a lot of people who seem to want to end that period of a pretty remarkable relative peace and great power peace. You know, no big wars. Mm-hmm. The Western Hemisphere for the first time in how long? It's like there's no wars in the Western Hemisphere. You know, so but Russia-Ukraine is this kind of eruption in the middle of this, and there's a lot of tensions that have built up that it feels like it's the expression of. Not to mention the tensions around China and the South China Sea. So is this the beginning of something, or is it just a brief little flashpoint? What's your sense?
Well, it's you know, what one of the things that Integral could help us see in the world in general is that one of the sort of sour points in evolutionary history is when you have modern weaponry in the hands of a pre-modern mind.
Yeah.
You saw that with the Nazis. You know, genocide is not particularly unique in human history. You know, the idea of wiping out your enemy and poisoning their wells and killing their livestock and you know, all of that good stuff. So that traditional mindset of just that sort of total warfare and is still online. And then people have modern weaponry. And that's a big problem. It's also a problem with, you know, people with guns in America who ought not have them. You know, you have people who are red and, you know, who are. So for whatever historical reasons, and there are many interesting ideas about it, Russia's center of gravity, traditional and a lot of red, actually, a lot of warrior sort of energy. I remember talking to some Integral Russians back, you know, 10 or 12 years ago, and they would tell me, I did a podcast with them, actually, that what Russia really needed to do, and this is back, you know, 10, 15 years ago, what Russia needed to do was move into traditionalism, move into where people would follow street signs. You know, and that sort of thing.
Have it become more powerful, right? Have it become stronger.
Exactly. Just bring that online because there's still people who are, you know, just living in these, you know, unstable kind of violent. So that's part of what's going on. And of course, Ukraine developed with the European identity. They polarized against that. You know, they've been dominated by Russia, the Russia after the Soviet Union, all of these other countries became modern. They wanted to become modern. And Russia's still there in that empire / traditionalist, nationalist.
It seems ancient, like I won this territory. It's like, you know, you forget that when you get into modern and late modern, countries stop wanting territory. They kind of want to give up territory. Want Mexico? Why? Why would we want Mexico?
These people? No, I want to trade with them.
I know, exactly. It's like you want to do what with? You know, it's like, it's a very interesting thing.
You can feel it in the Russian soul. And this is the upside. You know, the Russian soul is a real thing. And it's apparently they have more soul than the normal culture somehow. You know, I'll speculate. I don't know. Evolution's funny. You know, cultures get different distributions of all kinds of things. And so that Russia's soil and motherland and I can feel it again beating in my own heart. You know, I love that. And and then when you have that, you see modernity as actually in some way or another, a great Satan. You know, this is the great interest who wants to come and make men and women the same and wants to kill, you know, our God and take our children and make them transgendered and make everybody cool. But we don't want to be cool. We want to be faithful. We want to be Russian. We want to. And every country has that strata. The U.S. does, too, in its our own way, very powerful way, actually. But that's where Russia is. And so the Ukraine is part of that brotherhood. And I can go on sort of thinking about it. But in some ways I get post understanding. There's a new way of, and this is part of the fruit of the new Noosphere again. I'm obsessed with Russia-Ukraine war. Mm-hmm. So I'm on YouTube. I'm following this one. I'm following that one. I'm seeing the man on the street. I'm listening to the soldiers. I'm listening to the diplomats on all sides. Mm-hmm. I'm watching Russian media. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm hearing from the expats. I think of these presidents back like in Kennedy's day. They'd assemble a room full of 10 or 12 of the smartest people they knew. I have 1,000, that I can listen to. Right. And so does Biden if we want some. I mean, this is the nature of things now where my job doesn't feel like, I mean, I could feel that the part of me that wants Russia to get, the way forward here is for Russia to be defeated and, realize that awful realization that nationalistic thing isn't going to go anywhere. Western Europe, every country that goes modern, postmodern has to do it in one way or the other. Yeah. And so that's got to happen. And I think it will. You know, can you imagine? I mean, what's the win for Russia?
What's the win? What's the, I mean, okay, maybe they carve out a slice of territory and they have a little win at an incredible cost, but there's no way. I mean, Ukraine has made this decision, right? I mean, they're just not going to be dominated by Russia. It's not going to happen.
Would you like to be Putin's man in Kiev? You know, how would you like that job? You know, I mean, and this is a, evolution helps us. It's like you can't make that 13-year-old an 8-year-old again. You can't do that. It's not the way the world works.
Yeah, right.
And so, there's people can get bombed into the Stone Age, I suppose, but not really. You can see what's happening with the bombings in Ukraine. It makes them stronger in a certain way. This is this obscene paradox of war. But anyway, that's how I see it. So basically, it's modernity versus versus pre-modernity. You know, Russia, modern, Ukraine, modern, and it's we see the same thing in China.
Yeah,
we've yet to. I mean, Africa, the Southern Hemisphere, still has a lot of developing to do.
Yeah,
and our job. And this is where, as Integral comes online. It's coming online all over the world. Intelligentsia, distributed throughout. I mean, there'll be. I don't doubt that the road forward for, center of gravity pre-modern countries is going to be better than it was for the leading edge. Because God knows it couldn't be worse. I mean, if you think, the last 500 years in Western Europe, Jesus, So.
What do you think about, I mean, I find the Russia thing, it's like, part of our job, if I was president, it's like my foreign policy, part of, and I think it's true, even though I think we've never articulated it from an integral perspective in the way that maybe a president would, is like part of the job of America is to support and defend modernity around the world. Right? Because we know something happens in modernity that's important. Now, we can express that in ways that are inappropriate and wrong and fucked up, or we can do it in ways that are good, or, it's like, and it doesn't have to be violent. It doesn't have to be through arms. It doesn't mean we should go defend every, but it's like, I do feel like as much as I think sometimes real politic is necessary, absolutely is. People got to be on, we can't just pretend we can make every country in the world modern. I mean, that was the mistake of Iraq, right? We can just go into Iraq and make it a modern country. No, that was the arrogance, right? That was the arrogance. So, but at the same time, we have to support it either spiritually, psychologically, through media and occasionally through arms. It's like we have to defend that modern world to some degree while letting people be traditional if they're going to be that. But if people are going to be traditional, they can't go invade their neighbor. they can't go, there's some limit there that has to be imposed. So, so I hope it doesn't metastasize, and I wouldn't be against finding some, if the moment came to find some peace deal that everyone hated, I could get there. That's fine. I hope we can get there. Yep. But it can't be, it can't be that we're just going to give half of Ukraine away either. I don't think it can be that,
Yeah. No, I think that's right. And, just in general, as a sort of a guiding principle, from an integral perspective, we want everybody to be as healthy as they can be at the stage they're at.
Yeah.
So that means all your friends, different political
absolutely
streams in your own country, different countries, different parts of the world. Everybody gets to be who they are, and there's growth is built in. So it's like you said with crack, you can't defending modernity doesn't mean installing modernity.
Exactly. That's the thing. Right. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
So, but we learned that. We didn't know that before. Again, welcome to evolution, which is where, a large part is just about learning.
Well, we got attacked by this kind of deficient traditionalism in the form of, Bin Laden, this kind of, this kind of nasty traditional culture.
That's the part when you talked about sometimes we have to take up arms.
Yeah.
We have to take up arms sometimes against the Red Warrior stage.
Yes.
And we actually want them to be as healthy as possible, too. And we
absolutely
want that part to be as healthy as possible. But they are by nature violent. It is a feature, not a bug. Yeah. God wanted it that way for 99% of human history, apparently, no, maybe it was because Eve ate the apple. God really didn't want it that way.
Yeah, come on, baby. But yeah, it's like, and we learned that we got attacked by traditionalism in the Twin Towers, and then we learned the lesson. Oh, you can't just install modernity. You can't. That's a really bad idea. You can't do that.
Attacked by a red strata within a traditional culture. Iraq can be Iraq. You just don't want to fight them. At least you want to fight them. You don't want them attacking you. I mean, That's the part that modernity has to be, ruthless about.
Yeah.
Accessing our own red appropriate now.
Yeah.
Way more intelligently. And that's also true for, I would argue, for the red strata of our own cultures. So out of control drug addiction, vagrants, gangs, public disorder. This is, this is red. It's not new, If you think of, I read a lot about, history, people lived in gangs and people lived off the land. There's a certain beauty to actually living off the land. And these people actually don't want to be civilized. You'd see that happening in the Old West where people would be, they'd be abducted by Indians, or Indians would be abducted by white people. They'd want, some of them would want to stay, some of them would want to go back. So that's part of, I think, an integral approach is actually seeing that everybody actually, they get to be who they are. Now, drug addiction and is where they're doing self-harm. No.
Those are unhealthy versions. And it's like, and there's a certain point at which it can't collapse. It can't collapse other layers of society. That's the thing. It can be beautiful and healthy in its own way, or it can be deficient, and you can try to help it. But if it starts to spill over and collapse other layers of society, then you have to do something. We saw this in Oakland. I was living in Oakland. It's like the amount, and you're starting to see this in cities now. I just saw that the Republicans made a big gain in like voting in New York, and you're saying, why is that? Why did they go from being so many voters going to be from Democrat to Republican? Well, issues of crime. And I saw that in the Bay Area. Just like the way in which it's, there's always been crime and gangs and all kinds of things in those situations, and the homeless. And you feel bad for people. There's a lot of mental health issues, a lot of drug addiction. But then the way in which it metastasizes and starts to spill over into the society, you start to, and people, they've sort of forgotten the, like, I don't want to go back to the, I get that maybe we're in a more evolved world than lock them all up, or put them all in a horrible institution. Thank God we're in a more evolved world than that. And yet the just not doing that is not the answer. We have to find another answer. I feel like it's a situation in our cities right now. It's sort of calling for, it's desperately calling for a more integral response, a response that appreciate, that can do different things and can be multiple things, and respond. It really is, it's like, so anyway.
Yeah. Yeah. And making distinctions and being appropriate. And, I don't know what the answer is. But it's going to probably include more of the traditional law and order, public order dimension.
Got to be some of that.
post-modernity is comfortable with, and most of you know, our liberal friends. But of course, our liberal friends now, they're all getting a face full of it. So, you know,
and this is exactly it changes real fast when it's in your front yard.
But it's not about putting them in institutions, which is what happened in the old days, or just hazing and shooing them away, you know, that kind of thing. No, no, these are our brothers and sisters. They, there's something that needs to happen that they can be who they are, you know? I don't know. I mean, I'd say that we give them beautiful nature preserve, but then I realize, well, you actually have to have barbed wire around it. This is where it's. I'm not sure I'm going to be the guy who comes up with the solution here.
but it's definitely pushing us to better solutions. One more foreign policy question: what's happening? Is China going to invade Taiwan? Is that going to start World War III? What's going to happen, Jeff? Tell me. Help.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know, but again, it's that impulse of the Chinese people. So we have China's 1.3, 1.4 billion people. And I was just watching a documentary that talked about how maybe, I think this is an underestimation, but they talked about maybe 100 million of them are modern. And that's all it takes to, you know, run a society of a billion plus people. But the center of gravity of those billion plus people is traditional and earlier. You know, it's not modern. So they don't want balance. They want China. China. I mean, what better argument for an ethnocentric, you know, mentality than China, 4,000, 5,000 years old, you know, continuous, ahead of the game in many stages of development. You know, they were leading the way. And, you know, Chineseness means something. And that's, you know, from an integral perspective, that's the ethnocentricity, in a way, it's maybe not the right word, but that part of us that we want to conclude in an integral perspective where we can feel, you know, our ancestors somehow.
Pride in that, you know.
It's exactly. And maybe it's more flexible and it's multicultural. I don't know. But for traditional people, it's not multicultural. They don't want that. They want their culture triumphant, and that's what they deeply believe. And Taiwan has become a symbol of that. So there's probably a certain inevitability, you know, I think modernity wants to hold back on that because, you know, keeping borders secure is really a part of this modern world where it's peaceful and, you know, we can trade, which is what we really want. You know, we're after the money in modern. So, you know, those are the dynamics. I probably bet against long-term. You know, the other thing is, this is where kicking the can down the road is just take every opportunity to do that. Because
interesting, good.
You know, the Chinese people are evolving. The
leadership's evolving. They're getting used to be a world power. I mean, they're a new world power. I mean, they're not used to it. I mean, you also have to appreciate that they're not used to a bunch of other countries resenting them. You know, they haven't been in that position. You know, because debt diplomacy and various things, or a bunch of other countries looking to them, and it's just like this is all new. You know, for China, and so it's interesting to see. It's like you're right. You kind of want to let them. You want to help them mature in how they're relating to all this. You know,
And be traditional in the healthiest possible way. And this is where I appreciate what Xi Jinping is doing with bringing Confucianism back and having these, you know, these young red soldiers with their flags. I don't, you know, it starts being, you know, spilling over into that militaristic nationalism. But these, you know, clubs for teenagers and those are healthy, can be very healthy expressions. Yeah. They're essential expressions of a traditional society.
Interesting. Yeah, so, absolutely.
You know, may he, you know, thread this needle.
No, sometimes I feel like he's trying to thread a needle, and sometimes he'll do things where I go, "Ooh, I don't think that's going to help." And then sometimes he'll do things where I go, "That's interesting." You know, that's interesting. I, you know, he's It's a challenge, and he's ultimately going to have to find a way. I mean, you can't have one person just trying to do that ultimately, you know, so it's going to be interesting. It's a bit concerning that he's put so much on himself in a way. Yeah,
it's true. It's true. Yeah. Well, you realize that how, you know, even the idea of divided power, Carter, you know, think about that. Nobody actually really wants that.
That's right. Because they know better. I know better.
If to have Trump lose, I would do it, you know.
Yeah.
That's, but no, you realize that it's almost like what we're talking about, this new submission to, you know, this bigger thing where I trust
the submission to the cacophony of value, you know, the competing, you know, it's almost like globalization and the communications are pushing us toward that. Like they're forcing us to like we can still pretend that ultimately we're going to, you know, I'm going to win out or you're going to win out or my idea. You know, it's like you can pretend that if you, it's just you and your 20 people around in your little neighborhood or whatever. I don't know. He's like, you kind of know it's not true, but now you have to deal with it in real time.
And you can see that it's a recapitulation in a way of what happens at modernity, where you say, okay, nobody gets to win in a way. You know, we're going to have the three powers separated. We're going to have different schedules of, you know, all of that stuff that has taken, you know, the modern world into being, you know?
Yeah.
And we all believe in it deeply.
Yeah.
There's people who don't, and they just can't wrap their head around.
They can't get there. And it's just like, it's such a move. It's such an important move. You know, it's like, maybe that though. Yeah. Interesting. Fascinating.
So that's right, where the autocrat can actually come in handy.
Yeah.
And you know, and I think actually the Chinese Communist Party has for the last, 50 plus years, been, you'd have to say, to usher a free modern country into the modernity in a globalized way that they have with, a minimum of strife, you know, God knows there's a long list of critiques and, tragedies and ongoing.
Yeah.
But, they serve
it's
purpose.
Like the instinct to, push everyone down so we can all trade. it's a very powerful in modernism right now. It's like, and it has to be done to some degree, but then the tricky is like, at some point you go too far. You start, enslave may not be the right word, but you create, the ethnic, tensions. Cause the impulse is to keep the ethnic tensions from overwhelming. Right.
Yeah.
But then you go too far in keeping the ethnic tensions from overwhelming and you end up in a mess and you end up creating human suffering at a scale that is wrong. That's wrong. And so you can see they're trying to walk that line. And of course, then the greater challenge is as modernity develops, then you have to let go of those things. You know, you have to let people be, have to let me more and more let go of those ethnic tensions. Like you see that in Europe, right? You let all, look, who cares that the Catalans have more power? Is that a big deal? Or that Scotland wants to be independence? Do we really care? You know, but I'm sure like 200 years ago, that was a big thing. You know,
they fought long, bloody wars over it. You know?
Yeah, exactly.
No, it's really remarkable. And so, that's the modern world that we're, it's worth valorizing seeing that it has its downsides in, a lot of the downsides of postmodernity identified, that it's ecological disasters. It's, rapaciousness, inequalities, even though equality is better in modernity than it is in pre-modernity.
Sure, much better.
But at any rate, it's the downsides, the soullessness of modernity.
Yeah. Well, I want to get to that a little bit because I won't keep you too much longer, Jeff, but a couple more questions about more post-modernity and thinking like where we are, because I've been thinking about this a little bit, and I just kind of feel like one of the aspects, these are unformed thoughts, so I apologize if this is not clear, but I'll do the best I can. But I do think, we're far enough in, like post-modernity has enough of a grip in culture now that we're seeing some of the impacts of it. One of the impacts we're seeing, like, we're so used to, like, even in modernity and secular and, you know, our history, you know, kind of a relatively a shared view of history and a shared view of kind of science. And, you know, it's like, and like, post-modernity doesn't really, you know, it has, it's not like pre-modern. It's not like, it's not just, you know, we're all going to believe in this God. It's not quite like that, but it's slowly undermining all of that share. You know, it's like, and the worst side of that I see is like the endless conspiracy theories. You know, we didn't realize that was going to be a downside of post-modernity, but it certainly is, you know, it's like you see it. And I think, well, you know, religion sort of its own conspiracy theory in some way. You know, it's like in the history of, you know, it's like, it's just the one everyone was enforced to believe it. You know, it's like we all kind of got behind or whatever. I don't know, you know. But I do feel there's this kind of like the cacophony is part of like, oh, we're living in a new world a bit where there aren't these kinds of shared, you know, we don't all agree that, you know, America is this way or this history, you know, it's like where, you know, there is a lot of different perspective, you know, this kind of multi-perspectival world that we've been talking about is, and the cacophony is a challenge, you know, and how we're going to relate to that world, you know, is going to be interesting because we're just entering it, you know, and the other side of it is that, you know, also, we've gotten so used to living in a kind of like in our world. Like I grew up somewhat of a religious town, but I still kind of lived in a secular world. You know, there was religion, but like the world was sort of secular still. And maybe that's just how I grew up. But I feel like I'm so used to living in a relatively secular, you know, world. And again, postmodernity is going to push that envelope, and we're going to, you know, and like we're the spiritual but not religious movements and the indigenous and shamanism. And it's like, and we're only a few decades into this. You know, what this looks like in 60, 70, 80 years, it could be really interesting. And yeah, who knows, you know, the explosion of interest in psychedelics and all kinds of things, you know, again, like bringing back these kinds of indigenous traditions. You know, you think like I think 10 or 15 years ago, I think I kind of knew what that was look like. There was, you know, now I kind of think maybe I don't know what this looks like. Maybe in 50 years, this is going to look totally different. You know, this is going to really disrupt our whole sense of culture in ways that are very unpredictable. You know, and so I don't know, I'm curious, I have a couple more questions I want to ask you about this, but I'm curious to get your sense of how the re-enchantment of modernity is going and what that's going to look like, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I want to be a little bit glib and say that one of the things I sometimes, of course, I ponder this too, is that where I've landed is I think that our grandchildren will roll their eyes at us. You know, they'll think,
sure. I mean, sometimes I can almost feel people.
Like we look back and say, why did they fight like so much over nothing? You know?
Yeah.
And they'll be saying the same thing. They'll see our era as the era of the ideological warfare, and their attitudes, let's just get on with it. You know, let's just be, you know, hello.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know, something like that. So that may be, you know, because evolution's surprising.
Yeah.
And it may be something along those lines, and, you know, because you can't, it's never a linear, it's going this way, so it's going to continue to go this way.
Right.
It's never how it works with evolution. So, and even to look back, so using conspiracy theory as sort of our orienting principle, well, conspiracy theories was called government in pre-modern societies.
Yeah, exactly. You know,
it's what that was, again, a feature, not a bug. I mean, there was no authority except who you were, could, you know, conspire with or against.
Yeah.
You know, so welcome to conspiracies. And whoever could get the warlord's ear or the king's ear, and, you know, so that strata is still very much online for us.
Yeah.
I don't think postmodernity has brought it back as much as it's democratized it in a sense. It's allowed all of us who want to exercise that traditional conspiracy strata in our own being that we can do it now. And I would also say that I grew up in probably a stage earlier culture. So mine was religious. It was traditionalist. You know, yeah. They expected us to go to college if we wanted to, but you know, it was secular. And I mean, the conspiracies, oh my God. I mean, I'd sit and listen to my uncles and my cousins and talking about the politics. And, you know, I just think back at it. It's like,
oh, that's, you know, amazing. Yeah.
My cousin who was, he was a cop in DC and he came back and he was talking about how criminals have this kind of thumb. You know, I mean, just shit like that. And I was 13 just listening to him, you know.
Oh, my God.
It's rife, you know, the Republicans, the Democrats, it was all. So that's really not so new. And in a way, modernity,
yeah,
you know,
right
from it, you know, because we could, you know. But modernity never, you know, again, these stages don't go away. They get smothered, you know, they get rejected. But they're still there. So,
yeah. They get subsumed into the news. They get expressed in interesting ways.
Yeah. So modernity, you know, comes along. Post-modernity is, you know, opening back up to everything. It wants feelings to be back online in a way.
Yeah.
You know, anti-intellectual. It doesn't want everything reduced to some of analytics.
Exactly.
You know, there in our culture, whiteness has become sort of, you know, if you're thinking ethnocentrically about these things, and people do, so you see that as whiteness that's, you know, smothering the world with its headiness and its, you know, hierarchies. And, you know, you know, again, welcome to evolution. Everybody's figuring it out at the, you know, from the place that they're at.
I like that. I'm a white Anglo-Saxon Protestant Presbyterian, you know, frozen jokes. I'm like the quintessential of like modernity in that way. I mean, it's like if you want to hate modernity in this form, this is.
I did my DNA thing, and there was, you know, there's all this Scandinavian UK kind of British Isles thing, and then there's Romania. For when apparently the gypsies came through town once upon a time. And
I like that. That's good. That's great. I love that. That's hilarious.
Like, how did Romania get in there?
Okay. So the last question, I know you're not going to necessarily have a strong opinion about, but I want to get your reflections on it. Cause I go back and forth in my own mind. Like, I think, you know, I look at like what it took to give rise to modernity, and, you know, if you're living in Rome in the third century, you kind of see, we're starting to figure this out. You know, maybe under a healthy emperor, and you got, you know, you're starting to, everyone can be a Roman, and you've got, you know, you kind of feel like, you know, there, this is like, we can make the world Rome. You know, it's like, this is all can happen. You know, it's like, and, or maybe at some point, at least at some points in those eras, you know, you start to, and then you have to go through. And there's a level of freedom, and there's interesting thinkers, and there's a level of just engagement with the world, and maybe a little proto science coming online, all this. But no, that's not what happened. You had to go through 1,000 years of traditional culture before you could get modernity. If you're a modern living in Rome in the third century, you didn't say, "Oh no, we're going to go through 1,500 years of traditional culture, and that's how we're going to get. That's the way we're going to get to modernity." You know. That's a hard pill to swallow for a modern living in Rome in the second century or third century, whatever it is. So I guess my question is, like, as, you know, integralists, as fellow integralists, are we here kind of thinking at the end of late modernity, early post-modernity and culture and this, all this stuff happening around the world, can we move through this? Can we move into an age that's shaped by the kinds of ideas that we know can lead to a level maybe of human flourishing? Because you feel like there's a level of human flourishing that's available here that we've never touched, you know, that could be extraordinary and that we're, you know, that feel like we're working for. But sometimes I don't, you know, so sometimes I go back and forth. Is that what's around the corner, or is it 1500 years of traditionalism in the form of post-modernity, or not 1500 years, but you know what I mean, around the corner before we can get there. So, or is it 100 years or 150 years, or what's that? So what's your sense? How are you looking at this now?
Well, even to look at history, as you pointed out with Rome and Greece, you know, so we have these explosions of modern thinking. Okay, yeah. But these people who are thinking these modern thoughts were, by our standards, racist warmongers.
Yeah,
okay,
right.
Their moral development was maybe you should be nicer to your slaves. You know, they weren't really modern in all, you know, at all cylinders.
In all its glory, right. Yeah.
Exactly. So, you know, we can see that this is where the idea of first, second, and third person really comes in handy because, you know, to get a more stable flourishing of a stage, you know, yes, you have people thinking modern thoughts probably, God only knows, probably all over the place. You know, they coalesced in these societies that could sort of support them. But the second person, the way they thought about each other, the way they thought about other cultures, you know, of course, their first person.
Yeah,
you
know, right.
The third person, their technology was, you know, right up there with, torches.
No electricity, right? Exactly.
Yeah, but you get it. So there is a stability to modernity now that is, you know,
yes.
It's far more, you know, sturdy. And we have to notice that. You know, we have to notice the sort of permanent acquisitions of development that humanity
yes.
had. You know, we no longer do cannibalism. You know,
yeah.
we no longer do slavery.
Right, we don't.
Sure. You know, that's stable. And so there's a way in which, you know, we no longer do war. Actually, modern countries don't fight with other modern countries.
Once you get to modernity, you just don't do war, right? You don't.
Yeah, exactly. You know, the Golden Arches principle of foreign policy. No country
yeah,
with
Thomas
a McDonald's.
Friedman was on. He was on to something.
Exactly. If ever fought another country with a McDonald's. And then all of a sudden, Russia disproved that. I mean, just in some ways, it was the exception that proved the rule because, you know,
yeah.
it's so
obvious. Yeah.
But then McDonald's left Russia.
Yeah, so exactly. There you go, right?
But so, you know, so we have to notice these things. And so we ask ourselves, what's the stable moral development that we have now? And, you know, we think, I mean, one of the things I think a lot of us underestimate is what postmodernity has brought to us in terms of stable development in the modern world, if the so-called modern, the postmodern world.
Yeah.
It's like, for instance, so Kirstie Alley just died. And I loved Kirstie. She and I loved her on Cheers. So,
yeah,
you know,
Cheers was my first sitcom.
On Cheers. And, you know, in some ways they were shocking to me how insensitive they were. It's like she married this guy and then she found out he was a plumber. And she goes into I married a plumber. Ah, wah. And then the laugh track, you know, comes up. It's like it's just this casual elitist, you know, whatever it was, where the sensitivity of postmodernity, where we see that other people are hurt in ways that we didn't realize,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
The cultures, they actually have sensitivities that, you know, there's karmas of history where people have the burdens of history that they're carrying in ways that other people aren't.
Yeah.
You know. That we have to do account, and we do. I mean, even kicking and screaming, you know, even people who sort of resent the, you know, woke, postmodern, you know, hypersensitivity, multi everything world, they're still growing by it, you know.
They're still what?
They're still growing.
Yes.
By it, through it, because of it. And, you know, again, welcome to evolution.
It's changing the water. It's changing the culture. It's
yes,
in a lot of ways where it has to change, right?
Yes. Yes.
One of the things I was trying to, you know, explain the other day to someone, I was like, modernity is different because of postmodernity. You know, we can complain about all the excesses of postmodernity, and I do a lot. And all the excesses, like you say, of wokeness, that's its kind of current form, and, you know, all its dark ecology and anti-human elements and all this stuff. There's a lot we can complain about, relativism, but it's already, it's changing the culture in ways that we need to be changed. And yeah, there will be a million excesses, but it's changing our very consciousness in the way we relate to everything. And we're not even noticing it. And modernity of 1955 is entirely different than modernity of 2022.
So it's traditionalism. I mean, you know, we have people who are, you know, self-identified traditionalists, and we have people who, you know, that love Trump and all that stuff. They don't want slavery. They don't want the races to be, you know, they don't want, they don't want the pollution. They want to be nice to their animals. I go back home now, nobody has a dog tied behind their garage. When I was a kid, everybody had a dog tied behind their garage. These poor creatures just tied to a chain, you know. I mean, that, so this is the de facto integration of culture.
Yeah, yeah.
Where, you know, traditional people, the postmodern values, you know.
No, it's all overlapping.
Yeah, but, it's happening, you know, and again, under its own power. And this is, you know, the Daily Evolver. It's what I do. It's like I want to see how, these things are arising in real time. You know, it's how we're different now than we were a year ago, 5 years ago. You know, it's astonishing how we're growing, how fast we're growing now.
150 years ago, the big thing, you know, like, you know, you go see Hamilton and you see, well, Hamilton's, you know, Hamilton died and, you know, whatever, 18, whatever it was. And then his wife was like one of the first ones to form an orphanage in, I think, Washington, D.C. in the 18, whatever it was. And I always look back all the, you know, and you read the history of the 19th century, I was reading about orphanages and orphanages, because I guess there are a lot of kids just running around telling you, you know, it's like you think what was happening in the cities to have to form orphanages for these kids, because there's a lot of just, you know.
They called them.
They were just around, right? We don't have those anymore. Now, what's the big move? When you want to do something like you form a little sanctuary for animals. You know, we're trying to get all the cats off the street now. You know, all the dogs from, you know, with homes and loving homes. You know, it's like 150 years later. That's what we're doing. We're cleaning up the, you know, and I'm sure the next thing will be whatever it will be. You know, we're little, but you know, you just see the evolution of culture.
Yeah, even China is rethinking their dog meat festivals, you know.
Thank God.
Where they serve dog meat. You know, that it's no longer cool to do that, even in China, you know.
Yeah, right, there you go.
You know, it's in 17th, 18th century France, they did cat torture as public entertainment. Oh, God. You know.
Don't tell me that.
Electrocuted an elephant to show the superiority of DC power.
Oh my God. It's just amazing. I mean, you forget, you know, you just have to remember the brutality of our history. You know, it's good, but it's good to rub our noses in it every so often.
It's a fallen world, people. But, you know, it's the only thing we can say is it's better than it was yesterday in most ways.
And one of the things I appreciate is, like, obviously human flourishing is incredibly important and at the top of the hierarchy. But one of my passions is just like you start to see, we could have a world where animals, you know, it's a doggy dog world. It's a tough world to be an animal in any, you know, I think Wilbur liked to say nature's one big restaurant, right? It's a tough world. Nevertheless, thriving ecosystems of animals, you know, would be that we could create in the next few hundred years where we allow them to, you know, you could see it bringing back a kind of a thriving natural world. Could be one of the great projects of the next few hundred years.
I wouldn't be surprised if in a couple hundred years, 95% of the world is rewilded. And humans, you know, work on, you know, we enjoy it, we visit it, but yet we keep our, you know, boundaries. And
I agree.
Who knows? I mean, that
we don't. We're not going to need agricultural land. We're not going to need the pasture land. We're not going to need all that. We're just not going to need it. And population's going to be decreasing. And we're going to say, okay, I agree. Yeah. I'm with you. The future is wild.
This goodness, truth, and beauty will be achieved by means of things that are bad, ugly, and wrong. That's just the way. This system works. I don't like that second part, but it appears to be the physics of it.
Well, that's a great line. I think maybe I'll leave it at that. Any last thoughts? I really appreciate you. I appreciate the kind of free flowing nature of the conversation. It's fun to talk.
Yeah, me too. Yeah. I mean, I just think that, you know, people ought to consider developmental, just this updraft of the procreant urge of more arising out of less, you know, that is built into the cosmos and we are an expression of that. And, you know, it's funny to me. I find that to be a religious revelation, actually.
Yeah.
And it's delivered to us by science, the godless worldview, because it's history, you know, back to the Big Bang. But, you know, what better story than evolution? My goodness.
Yeah. And what a beautiful thing to have faith in, you know, not the kind of faith that, not the kind of faith that assumes any particular outcome, but that nevertheless sees the trajectory, can see it, and can appreciate it, and can understand it, and it, you know, occasionally can try to help it along, but not pretend that we can master it, you know.
Yeah, well, that's one of the, I think, markers of evolutionary of integral consciousness, of this postmodern consciousness, is that you see evolution, and you begin to feel it as the wind in your sails in a way, and then you can, because you can see it, you can cooperate with it. You can co-create with it. You can, you know, bring your intelligence to the, you know, so yeah, the wind's in your sails, but then you get to, you know, turn the sails or whatever. Yeah. I don't know.
Like that. Yeah. Whatever the metaphor is.
Whatever the metaphor is. I know there's one.
Beautiful. Amen. 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 Well, thanks, Jeff. I appreciate it so much. Let's do this again before long. It's fun to talk. It's fun to cover the world. And as you're on Twitter and for the next 6 months, we'll have a lot to talk about.
Yeah, cool, man. Thanks, everybody. Thanks, Carter.
Thanks.
I want to thank Jeff Salzman for joining me today on the podcast and for bringing his unique take on the news of the day. And a reminder that you can always find out more about his work or follow his work by following the Daily Evolver podcast. All right. That's it for today's episode. A reminder that you can always follow this podcast more closely by signing up for my newsletter at carterphipps.com/newsletter. And the newsletter is also called Thinking Ahead. All right. I look forward to next time. Thanks for joining me.